part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Well, welcome to the first part-time fanboy podcast of the apocalypse.
Yay!
I think this is the first time. I've done an episode where we're all locked in our homes, but that doesn't matter for us because we always do this via Skype or some other, you know, we don't do it in person because LA is a big place and it's a pain in the ass for everyone to drive around and meet up in person. So, and we're all busy people. So we just do it via the magic of Skype, which is working properly right now. So good, good, good Skype. Good.
This is exactly
you're so pretty, Skype. I love what you're wearing today.
nice. So for anyone listening, this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name, as always, is Christian Horn. I have on the line my good friends Ivis Cannavale, Reina Velarde, and last but not least, Paul Edwards. Dun dun dun.
Man, one of those names just doesn't belong.
Hey, yours is just as Nordic or white as mine, so there you go. But in any case, we are here to discuss the relatively new film, I would say, The Invisible Man, the most recent version telling of this tale. That stars Elizabeth Moss and is produced by, I guess, Blumhouse, right? Productions?
Yes.
In coordination with Universal, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And so this came out actually several weeks ago, but because the whole world is supposed to be staying in place, some studios, mainly Universal, I think, have been enabling people to watch the stuff that's supposed to be in the theater online, correct? Yes, that's correct. I'll answer my own question.
Pay attention, class.
We're doing a podcast.
This could be the thing that actually ends up sort of killing the release window.
Yeah. Could be. I don't know. I think this is a thing that I'm a big listener of the business podcast on KCRW, and they're chatting about that like all the time, that this new crisis could be the thing that opens up like same day theater, you know, same day streaming and theater releases, but they don't want to freak out the theater owners, you know.
In any case, it could be that The Invisible Man is sort of like one of the last big studio releases in theatrically for a long time.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, it could be that, or I guess, is this a big theatrical release? Because The Hunt was the thing that I wanted to see like last weekend. I really wanted to see that movie, and now that's streaming too. Quite honestly, between the two movies, I probably would have rather watched The Hunt, but everyone else, I think, had seen The Invisible Man. So I was like, okay. In any case, this is sort of the new reality, right?
I was looking to do a Bloodshot podcast. I don't know about you guys.
God, I can't get started because I love Valiant, but Vin Diesel is in it, and it breaks my soul in half that he's in
quiet.
A Valiant.
I will not sit here and stand for this Vin Diesel besmirchment. No.
Well, then you shouldn't stand close to me because it will happen continually. Not that we're standing close to each other because we are separate from one another in the physical space. But in any case, what we did watch was The Invisible. I keep wanting to call it The Invisible Woman by accident, but it's The Invisible Man. And again, starring Elizabeth Moss and the 2020 release. And so why don't we start off by, you know, I guess talking about the movie. Who would like to start?
Well, ladies first.
Ladies first.
You always say that, and I always say, then you go first, because you know that's not an excuse for me to go first, because I'm a lady. And who says I'm a lady? Let's be real.
Okay, wait. Let me say, chainsaws go first.
Chainsaw.
That's very specific. If we're being specific, then run-na-na-na-na.
Yeah,
and then... it's been a minute since we've podcasted, but essentially, right, I think that to answer something you said earlier about this being a big theatrical release, I think it wasn't, especially for, you know, the horror genre, I think a big theatrical release.
Yeah.
In that sense, but, you know, woman that's battered and beaten and, you know, with a man that's all powerful and controlling, you know, gets his way even after, quote unquote, death. So a lot of interesting, you know, sci-fi things going on there.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, gets her revenge in a nutshell. But I really liked it. I think it was really powerful just from a horror standpoint of like all the things that, you know, can happen, you know, like I really like writing about people in your real world that can be scary, right? Like not, you know, ghouls or goblins or zombies, but like actual people in your life that could come back to harm you. And even just watching the trailer, just the power and knowing that, you know, after someone's death, metaphorically, they could always come back to haunt you. And they're just putting this in like a, you know, realist quote, you know, form. Which even the science stuff, you know, the, you know, invisible, what's it called?
The suit,
but like, you know, in real life, there are visibility cloaks that like the military are using. So we're not even far off from this being like science fiction-y stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just on a different level. So I think a lot of good things came out of this movie.
Sure.
Here's my rant.
No, that's not a rant. That's an opinion. That's what we want here. That's what we want. Paul, do you want to go next?
I enjoyed the I really like Leigh Whannell as a filmmaker. I watched Upgrade last night.
Oh, is that who directed this? Because Upgrade is amazing.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I hadn't seen Upgrade until after I saw The Invisible Man.
Oh, and really?
Literally, when I saw Upgrade, I was like, oh, that's why they gave him the Invisible Man. I can easily see this because he has a really, I think a really good sensibility. It seems very believable. It's very present day augmented with, like, future tech.
Sure.
It feels to me almost like sort of... what was that 80s the cyberpunk kind of feel?
Oh, like Cyborg?
I'm thinking of like William Gibson or, you know, some of the writers, you know, who would like give you this very, very believable future thing. And I loved like sort of the idea that it's like, you know, it was this sort of horror movie without a supernatural monster, you know, it's just a bad person with some really good tech, and you know, what could they do with that? And I just really dig the composition in the movie, you know, the action sequences, and even with this one, just the way they would frame shots to make you uneasy as to where the invisible man is going to be, or even, you know, just the whole point of like leaving space for the invisible character even within the shot, you know, it's really well put together.
That was interesting.
So I just like, as a movie, it really hit me in all the good places I want a movie to hit me.
How about you, Evis?
It was good. I am going to rain praises down on this film because I love Leigh Whannell. I think he's a fantastic writer and filmmaker. I mean, he, you know, worked on the Saw films, Conjuring. He did The Mule, and Upgrade is what Venom should have been, in my opinion. Mm. So I loved about, I think, I mean, the effects in this film are great. There's no doubt about it. But what I really loved are the shots where he just kept the camera still in one place. And you just stared at this empty scene that, I mean, well, it's empty as far as we know. And he just really kept the tension just ramped up. And I could not take my eyes off. I mean, I also watch a movie, but I was riveted from beginning to end. He did such a great, great job. And I'm hoping that this is finally, I mean, I'm hoping Universal dropped that Dark Universe crap because I don't really care.
I'm sure that's why this got me. I mean,
Shortly after this, they handed the Dracula movie to Karen Kusama, who's
I'm so excited. You know,
another amazing filmmaker who's sort of out of that little school, that little group, you know, of really talented filmmakers. And it feels like they're going in a more Blumhouse like style of not necessarily having to link them all together in a shared universe, you know, but just making them all good monster movies, which is all we wanted from the beginning, guys.
Sure. Exactly.
We don't need Tom Cruise.
We don't need Tom Cruise. We don't need Dracula Untold. We don't need any of that. It's fine. Leave it alone. Yeah. But overall, I thought this film was great. And Elizabeth Moss, everybody in the cast was fantastic. And actually, it's funny because I did actually throw on Hollow Man for about 40 minutes before I jumped on. You know, and I have to admit, as much as I love this film, and I do kind of miss, because I love the transformation effects in Hollow Man. Even though they're kind of not. They're 90s kind of effects. They're still pretty
they
cool.
hold up. I don't want to get too much into Hollow Man, but I watched it after I watched this. And Hollow Man, all right, I won't even... Okay, continue. Sorry to interrupt.
But other than that, the current iteration of The Invisible Man was fantastic, and I'm looking forward to more stuff from Leah Whale.
Sure, sure. Let me ask you guys this. Who saw it in the theater, and who saw it at home?
I saw it in the theater.
Okay.
Theater.
Yeah, I think that may have had something to do with why I'm not so crazy about this movie. I mean, I did not hate it. I just did not love it either. I think it's a very good movie. I think it's a beautiful movie. I'm actually really surprised that the director of Upgrade directed this, because Upgrade just blew my socks off. Like, I think I came across that on HBO by accident. And I remember, I was kind of curious to see this movie. And both Amy and I kind of had the same reaction with Invisible Man last night when we were watching it. We were both very much like, this is okay. Like, I think Elizabeth Moss is fantastic. She's fantastic in everything. I mean, The Handmaid's Tale is fantastic. She's terrific. She's really good at that sort of like, I'm in over my head, I'm screwed, like, you know, I'm being terrorized by the world sort of thing. She's an excellent actress. But for me, this movie just did not get moving fast enough. Like, I wanted to see some Invisible Man shit, and I didn't get my Invisible Man shit until about an hour into the movie. And by that time, I was, like, kind of, like, done. I really felt like it could have been sped up a little bit. As far as like moving the plot along, and I felt like the movie was probably 15 to 20 minutes too long. I know that we had to pause like almost midway through, and we looked at how much had gone by, and I was like, Jesus, it's been an hour, which I guess is good, but is also kind of bad in a way that I was just like waiting for something to kick in. And while the opening I felt was like really solid, there's like movies that I go to like Godzilla or, you know, The Invisible Man. And maybe it's because I have sort of expectations as to like what's going to sort of occur. And I feel like the buildup, to like when it finally kicks in takes too long. But I will also say, and spoilers, because we always spoil stuff here on Part-Time Fanboy, because that's why people love us. That when it finally does, like when the moment happens, that's a real sort of like, pardon my French, kick to the nuts. When that happens and comes out of nowhere, which I think you all know what I'm talking about, it was very much like out of left field for me. I was very much like, whoa, 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 whoa. And my wife was the same. So, I mean, all in all, I think it's good. I think it might have played better in a dark theater. I kept thinking about that, like, while I was watching it. But yeah. But for me, it just, it did not blow me out of the back of my seat. And, you know, I don't know if that's a good reason to sort of pardon it for failing. Because I know, again, I saw Upgrade from my couch at home and I was just blown away. So, yeah, I understand the need for sort of like Hitchcock suspense and stuff like that. But I feel like that this was a really slow burn, and I'm very, very tired of like slow burn horror, if you get my drift.
No, I think that the like rhetorical part of maybe it being slower where you're not seeing the invisible man yet, like, is almost the reality of an abuser who's been there and you've gotten away from your abuser, making the audience feel that and feel the tension of, you know, like, are they there? Is she crazy? Maybe she's crazy. Maybe there is no invisible man. Maybe there's all bullshit. And then finally,
I don't think they played on that more enough. I thought they could have played on that much more, but anyway, go on.
And then is the point you're talking, is it the first thing, the throat slit?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess to me, the throat slit was so cool as far as horror and gore that
sure.
I was.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh no, that I like that. That's what I'm saying. Like that to me, to us is like when the movie like really kicks in, but it takes like a little over an hour to get to that. And in the meantime,
something came out of left field. What was that reference?
That was what he was talking about.
It comes out of left field. I mean, all of a sudden the knife is at her throat and it slit, and then the knife is in, you know, Elizabeth Moss's hand, and it's like, what just happened? You know, which is an amazing moment in the movie. But for me, it's like you took an hour and like 10 minutes to get to that point. And I appreciate what you're doing. You're establishing character and there's dialogue. I just felt like it could have taken a little bit quicker to get to that point. And then there's also a couple of points in the story that occur where, you know, like, let's just, obviously there's a bit of like the invisible man manipulating her life to make people sort of like get upset with her. And there's like a whole sequence with the sister where she goes to visit her sister and her sister's like ticked off at her. And she's like, oh, I really saw that email. And I was like, wait a minute. This is like your sister who's been abused. And you're just going to be like, you sent me an email and take that at face value. You know what I mean? Like to me, I was just like, this is dumb. Like, because if I go hang out with Evis and Evis comes to me and says, hey, Christian, you're an asshole. That email that you sent me this morning. And I'm like, dude, I have like no idea what you're talking about. Evis would probably go, oh, were you hacked or something? And I would go, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I'd be like freaked out. You know what I mean?
No, I wouldn't. I would still think you're an asshole.
Well, you think that anyway. No, I'm sorry, Paul. You were gonna say?
I don't know if we know what kind of relationship they had before she got involved with him either. You know, like that's.
I agree with you.
It seems like a very loving relationship.
Yeah, but also the same thing with when the little girl got slapped.
Yeah.
And she just went, and it's like, boy, you really. I mean, of course you're gonna think, well, obviously it was her because. What else? But at the same time. It's like, it seemed, I mean, she was right next to her. How do you not see if she moved or not? Like,
sure,
I was
a little,
that was my little quibble, you know, but I get what you're saying about the slow burn. But at the same time, there are other films I've seen where it literally is like nothing happens. And then 30 minutes before it ends, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
And that to me is this, at least for me, even though it is a slow burn, I was so involved with Elizabeth Moss's character. And I was so worried about her the entire time that I actually really didn't even notice that it took an hour before shit starts to get real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So well, for me, I mean, I just felt it. I just felt like, okay, come on. Let's get to what we're going to get to. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe I'm an impatient viewer. But again, there is a thing where it's like also sort of the like slow burn of the insanity wasn't happening. I just don't feel like the tension was wound up enough. Like I was like, okay, where are we going with this? And why is everyone so quick to believe that she's, you know, like one scene, they're having like an amazing family moment and they're celebrating that she's going to send this kid to college. And then she slaps the kid, to your point, Evis. And it's like the dad, I mean, obviously as a dad, I would be like, whoa, 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 whoa. But this is somebody who's been in my house for at least 2 weeks, who's been a cool guest, who's timid as a mouse. And then all of a sudden she's like slapping my daughter and no one sort of like makes the, like the dad doesn't even stop and go like, whoa, wait a minute. You know what I mean? Or the daughter doesn't even go like, wait, what just happened? You know, there's a lot of sort of jumps that occur that kind of bugged me. And that didn't ruin the movie. It's just more the buildup to it.
I find in moments that are that tense and that are that violent that people have different perceptions of what happened during those times.
Sure.
And I think that that's sort of the thing that that Adrian, the character, the invisible man, sort of plays on. I mean, it's interesting that they call him, that he's in optics, you know?
Yeah.
Which not only is like, you know, the study of light and how it works, but also of how things look.
Perceived, you know? Yes, and how things are perceived,
And I thought for a character who's sort of not there in most of the movie,
mm-hmm.
that's sort of an amazing character because, you know, you see the degree of manipulation that he does here, and you can only imagine what he was like without the suit.
Sure, mm-hmm. Sure. It's funny that you mentioned that, though, because to me, it's like, isn't that what Blumhouse is all about? I mean, with their ghost and their little kids movies and their doll movies and stuff like that, where it's very much like there's sort of an ominous presence in the house or in these people's lives. I probably have not seen as many of them as you guys have, but the ones that I have seen, they're very good at sort of this, like, and some of them not so good at this, like, oh, there's like a presence there. We can't explain it and we can't see it. What are we going to do about it? Am I right about that?
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of a common theme, yeah. I think, in many horror movies. But
sure.
I think what Blumhouse does well is they do make these, you know, movies that for the most part are good. I've heard mixed stuff about Fantasy Island, but
Fantasy Island was awful.
Evis, you went to go see it? That's so great.
I went to go see it, and real quick, I like the fantasy, but when they try to wrap everything up and make it and try to be clever, it completely fell apart, and I just walked out going, garbage.
Yeah. Welcome, everyone. But smiles. No Mr. Rourke, no Fantasy Island. That's all I'm saying.
But, you know, they're good at making these, like, sort of low-budget, you know, movies that, you know, some of them are pretty, are some of them formulaic? Yeah, you know, but then that lets them, you know, take a risk on something like Black Klansman, you know, so I see them almost, you know, they're not indie, you know, because really they're a subsidiary of Universal at this point, you know, with this distributing deal. I mean, they used to be like all over the place with distributors, but I feel like they're going to lock in with Universal now.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. It'll be like a Pixar Disney thing.
But, you know, like that's what, you're right. It is. It's what they do. They make these, you know, basically B movies. And the Invisible Man was always sort of like a B monster.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sort of a lower echelon Universal monster, you know. And, you know, it's not like the big three, you know, the Wolfman, Dracula, and Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But I don't know. To me, it felt like a good remake, you know, like they took the initial premise of that Invisible Man and they went in a really good modern direction that made sense. I mean, if somebody were handed, you know, a movie monster and said, here, make a modern update, they would be hard pressed to come up with something that's better than that, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because, I mean, I did send you guys a link to The Hollow Man, which is on Crackle for free. I was happy to discover because as soon as I watched this, I realized the sort of parallels versus like the Hollow Man, how much of an anti-Hollow Man movie this is, where Hollow Man, you know, released in 2000, which I think was probably the last sort of big budget Invisible Man movie, like, you know, released in theaters.
Yeah.
So I think that this is somewhat of a fair comparison. But I did watch The Hollow Man after I watched this, and I found The Hollow Man to be as kind of jacked up as the place that it's coming from, which is a place of like totally no Me Too movement or anything like that involved, where, you know, there's a creepy character who is a misogynist and, you know, just spies on women and treats them as objects, you know, as much as, you know, Kevin Bacon's character is a sleazebag, the sort of action and the threat of the movie moving forward really, you know, caught me much more than this movie did. So I don't know, you know, but I do appreciate this sort of like taking it and flipping it and making this sort of like, because I think this is the first time the Invisible Man story has been told sort of like directly from, to use the lack of a better term, the victim, you know, of the story, where usually the Invisible Man story is like, brilliant dude, he's a scientist, he takes a serum, a venom, or a suit, a technology, or whatever, and then slowly starts to descend into madness because of what he's doing. And that is the big thing that I really appreciated about this, is that it took it from a different perspective and kind of flips the story around on its head. Mm-hmm. And to Raina's point, you know, the thing that I did like what it was really trying to do was talk about sort of abusive relationships and control and stuff like that. So that's the thing that I did like, but it's really funny to look at it through the lens of like The Hollow Man, where The Hollow Man is just, I remember when that movie came out and the controversy about it, where the Hollow Man basically, and it seems a little tame to me, you know, comparing 20 years later, I can't believe it's been 20 years, but comparing 20 years later, it seems a little tame to me. But at the time, I remember people were just freaking out at the sort of like sexual assault scenes or the sexual sort of like innuendo stuff that he was. And I think that may have been because it might have been the first time that Invisible Man concept was tied into sexuality at all. Am I making any sense?
Yeah,
you are. But for number one, it's Paul Verhoeven who directed that. So you know it's not going to be subtle.
Yeah, I mean, no.
I just watched a film starring Michelle Rodriguez where she plays a transgender hitman, and it was directed by Walter Hill.
And okay.
That's what I'm talking about, not subtlety. But also, I mean, not to take, but even if you look back, even there were two films that came out one in the 80s, one in the 90s, I think. One was The Man Who Wasn't There with Steve Guttenberg.
Yeah.
Like Invisible Man. And that one, he was like running into showers and shit. So I don't know. He wasn't committing sexual assault, I'll say that much.
Sure.
And then there was The Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Oh, God.
With Chevy Chase.
Directed by John Carpenter.
Directed by John Carpenter.
And it's awful. And I saw that in the theater, too. It's a terrible movie. It's a terrible movie. No, I mean, I think for me, it is, I think what upset, or what, I mean, obviously, if you watch The Hollow Man, I mean, there is misogyny in there. I mean, it was part of that sort of like showgirls, like, you know, sort of like, I don't know how to explain it. Maybe somebody else can put it in a better way than I ever could. But
I think part of Kevin Bacon's character was he's supposed to be a dick. So he's
going
to be misogynistic.
And he's a creep from the outset.
Elizabeth Shue does end up defeating him.
So
by a woman. So I'm, you know, it's not like I couldn't appreciate. I mean, yeah, I think I remember about the controversy, and I was like, I remember seeing it going, even then I was like, what's the big deal? I don't get it. It's a fun movie.
It is kind of, it's a little creepy, but I think that with that movie, and I don't want to delve too much off into that movie, but I liked it. I mean, I actually enjoyed it. I couldn't believe how much I liked it because I was like, oh, wow, okay. Like, this surprises me. But I think that it was tying in sort of like, I think it's the first, I mean, obviously every guy, as ridiculous as it is, or every person, it seems like invisibility is the superpower that everyone like wants, right? Like when there's a poll of like, what superpower would you want? There's always invisibility. So like, and it seems to be like one of the most highly, you know, sought after or wanted sort of things. But I think with the Hollow Man, it was the first time that it actually tied into sort of like sexual violence. Like
A lot of the early, you know, and overt things were always centered around, he's going to take over the world. You know?
Yeah.
It's always centered around like, you know, like becoming rich and powerful and everything.
Spy. And spy. Yeah.
And yeah, the Hollow Man was the first one to make the subtext like text, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. 100%. That's a great way to put it. And with this one, what I really liked about it. Like, I really liked the second half of the movie. For me, the first half of the movie is the movie that I have a problem with. But the second half, and I do have problems with the second half where they kind of like turn the Invisible Man character into sort of like the Terminator for a little bit. Like the whole mental hospital sequence to me seemed very much like Lyndall Hamilton, you know, and he's kicking the crap out of all the guards. And I'm like, okay, like this is very Terminator, which now Upgrade makes a little more sense because that's very like Blade Runner sort of like Terminator.
And now that you mentioned that I was also thinking how absurd, like where are all these cops and security coming from? Like they're just like, you know, coming and coming. I'm like, all right.
Just churning them out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that's funny because I was actually very much like, there should be more guards because I was like, where are all the guards? Because they kept coming like one half. It was like a bad sort of like Bruce Lee fight where they just kept coming. They didn't come like in groups, or if they were in groups of two, one would watch as the other one got his ass kicked and not do anything and just be like, what is happening? You know what I mean? Which I guess you would do if there was like an invisible man beating the crap out of your friend or something. But at some point, something registers, right? That something's gone wrong. So, but for me, it's my own fault where, you know, I'm watching the second half of the movie and this is much more compelling. And the scene, especially, and I don't want to jump too far ahead. Where, you know, the fact is revealed that she's pregnant, right? And, you know, the scene where she's like, you can't have the baby. Like, I thought that was awesome. Like the scene that leads to the sort of like Terminator, like escape sequence, Terminator 2, like escape sequence. Like I thought
where
that was
them into coming. After
yeah.
Her,
she
yeah.
baits
yeah.
him to coming and yeah. I thought that was like really smart and really clever. And that whole second half of the movie, like I was on board, but for me, it's like to get to that, to have to wade through like all this other stuff. And I was just like, God, let's just get to it already. You know what I mean? Because that is what I want as like a horror and thriller sort of fan. And I felt like, you know, the sort of silly stuff that happens was silly and to, you know, like with the sister and then the girl that gets hit. And I was like, okay, you had me in a logical place and you kind of like now took me out and pulled me out of the movie. And now I got to find a way back in, which the sort of like, the knife slashing was able to do. You know what I mean? Because as soon as that happened, it was like, oh, okay, we're off to the races. I just wanted to get to the races quicker, you know?
Mm. Okay. I was excited when they revealed that she was pregnant because I was like, ooh, are we going to see like an invisible baby come out? That'd be awesome. And, you know,
yeah.
But then it was revealed it was cameras. I'm like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
Come on, leave something for the sequel, man.
Exactly.
Just like the Fly. Can we get Eric Stoltz to be in the Invisible Man too?
Oh yeah, he could come out look wearing all the cameras coming out of her vagina and just, you know, and everything.
Oh jeez. That's so funny. Oh, so you were thinking that the Invisible Man was like a genetic thing or like a serum?
I because I'm trying to remember when was.
But she found the suit before that.
Yeah, I know that, but I forgot because I heard she was pregnant, and I just thinking, oh yeah, you know, every other Invisible Man has been like chemically, like, you know, chemically affected, yeah. And I completely forgot for that second that, you know, he was just wearing cameras all over his body.
Yeah, maybe the radiation of the suit might have gave her a mutant baby, maybe.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. I would have loved to have seen.
Not like they had sex with the suit on.
I know, exactly. That's so funny.
Or did
who knows? Maybe he had it on and turned it invisible. I don't know. What did you guys think of that suit? I'm curious.
I loved it.
Yeah,
me too.
What was cool about it is, like, as soon as you got a look at it, you immediately kind of knew how it worked. Even if you didn't know how it worked, you kind of knew what it did. And you were just like, oh yeah. You know, like, it just, for me, like, literally as soon as I saw that suit design, I was just like, oh, that's how he did it. And I didn't even like question it. Gave me just enough science to be like, okay, I buy it. Yeah. And then check, you know, thank you. That's enough for my suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. It was perfect enough to where I was like, oh wow, like, that's a really neat design. Yeah, you nailed it on the head, Paul. Like, it was great. As soon as you physically see it, you're like, oh yeah, that works for me. Like, there was no sort of question of like, you know, what was funny is that when Elizabeth Moss in the beginning of the movie sneaks down into the basement and, you know, she's trying to get out of the house and you sort of see that big lab. Amy turns to me and she goes like, what is this guy, Batman? Like, what is happening here? Like, she didn't really, you know what I mean? She's just like, who is this guy that she's, you know, trying to escape from? You know what I mean?
What I dug too is that, like, it was that it just went sci-fi, you know? It's like,
sure.
Instead of trying to make it, you know, like some sort of a chemical thing, or it's just like, no, we're just going to go like straight hard science fiction here. And, you know, that way, to me, that made the whole thing more entertaining because it felt really organic to the universe it built, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because I really found it interesting, the sort of bit that after her boyfriend dies, the Invisible Man, quote unquote, dies in the movie, and he leaves her all that money. I remember, again, my wife, Amy, turning to me and being like, I would say keep it. And I was like, hell no. I'm like, the guy was a jerk. I'm like, I'm going to take his money and put it to good use. And that's kind of like exactly what she does. You know what I mean? Which is kind of donate to her friend's daughter's education, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was sort of like a nice touch of like, I'm going to take something bad. But it's interesting to me because at the same time, it's like, as soon as the brother says, like, if you're convicted of a crime, you lose this money, I'm like, oh, she's going to be convicted of a crime. I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know what it is or what it's going to be. But the thing that I loved, and again, sort of jumping around in the movie, was the sort of callback to the fire extinguisher at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like the first sort of little teeny Invisible Man thing is like she's cooking something in the kitchen and she goes to run in the other room and the stove like mysteriously gets turned up, you know, higher and higher. And later on in the movie, she uses that same extinguisher to sort of like show him while he's invisible. I dug that. I was like, very well done. There was something about it that I liked.
Chekhov's fire extinguisher.
Yeah, exactly. What did you guys call the brother thing at all? Or, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that at all. Like the big
I had a little bit of a feeling. I'm like, okay, he's helping him. And not just helping him, like, you know, because we all thought he was dead. But once I'm like, he's helping him in some fashion. I didn't actually have it. I didn't think he was actually going to be in the suit.
Yeah, I did. I thought he was going to be the big player all along. And that's sort of my question that remains. Like, was his brother? Because, I mean, eventually what we find out is that the man that's supposed to have been in the suit was supposedly locked in the basement the whole time, correct?
Mm-hmm. At the very beginning, I thought, oh, maybe his Invisible Man was an asshole to his brother, and like, you know, but like him telling her that at that first meeting, I thought, okay, maybe Invisible Man's gonna kill his brother, right? Like, you're gone for because you're talking shit about your brother and he's listening.
Sure.
But then, yeah, that goes back to the kind of ... mystery at the end. Like, was he tied up at the end, and does he still deserve it anyway because he was an asshole, abusive husband? Or was the brother playing with the suit and locked up his brother? But then, like, then there's no explanation for why. I mean, either, I guess, other than him being an asshole to his brother, which goes back to the main point of he deserves it.
Yeah. Yeah, my question too is, I mean, since we're talking sort of about the abuse, is like, are we talking about physical abuse, mental abuse, controlling? I mean, obviously, they're just, one is just as serious as the other, but there's a part of me that I don't know that they ever clarified, like, did Adrian was his name, right? Did he actually hit her, like physically assault her? Was that part of the abuse? Was any of that made clear, or does it matter?
I don't think it really matters, but I kind of assumed it was physical. I mean, obviously, to me, physical and mental are one and the same. And if you're physically abusing someone, you're mentally abusing him on top of that. So
yeah, I remember there's the discussion about how he wanted to have a baby, but she would take birth control pills. And so I would make the argument that, like, that's not really her consenting to sex. So I think on a regular basis, at least raping her, which is physically abusive.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I guess. Well, I think this is the first movie that I've ever seen birth control pills placed as product placement, because like when she's sneaking away, she's got the bag open and she's got like the pills right there. And obviously I didn't know that they were birth control pills, but there was a brand there. And I was like, is that product placement for a pill? Yeah. I mean, I could see the name of what it was, but I don't know if it's a legit real thing, but
yeah. Yes, it is. It's birth control pills for invisible people. It's
invisible sperm.
If you don't want to get assaulted by an invisible man, take our pills.
Yeah. So Raina, what are your thoughts about the end? Because I'm sort of curious about that, mostly because you're sort of saying he deserved it. And there's a part of me that sort of like wades into the back and forth of like, did this guy do it? Was he behind it? If he wasn't behind it, does he deserve to die? Like what? Like what sort of? I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, those are sort of the things that I was sort of like struggling with at the end, and I guess that's what they're sort of going for. I was just sort of conflicted at the end. I was like, oh wow, she just totally killed him. And up until sort of like his dying breath, he was like, I had nothing to do with this, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm willing to believe that either he's lying and both the brothers were doing it at different times, or that, yeah, fuck him, he deserves it.
I'm with Rania. I 100% think he was behind everything. Or he's worked with his brother, but I do believe he did it. He's lying through his teeth when he says no to her. Okay. He says he had nothing to do with it, because he wants her back. And I mean, he's trying to work another way of getting back with her and manipulate her again. Instead of like going, you know, head on, he's trying to now manipulate and try to maneuver these corners to get back with her. Yeah. So yeah, I think he 100% was involved and did it.
Sure. It's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Raina.
I was trying to remember what happened to the brother at the end of the movie.
He got shot. She shot him.
Who? I can't remember who killed him.
Elizabeth.
Happened.
Elizabeth Moss.
No, it was the daughter.
No, I thought Elizabeth Moss grabbed the gun. She uses the fire extinguisher. I mean, I just watched it last night. I should know.
That's right. And they take off the mask and he's there. That's right.
Because Elizabeth Moss shoots him a couple of times. In the chest, because she sees him, she grabs the gun and she sees him because her friend, the very hunky, I don't know the actor's name, but damn, was that guy ripped or what? He's the Visible Man.
He's from Leverage.
I've never watched it. But he is the extremely visible man because he's a very good looking man. Let's just put it that way. But he's getting his butt kicked. He's getting his butt kicked. And I think he has a gun. And she used the fire extinguisher to, you know, be able to see him. And then he kind of stands up and then she shoots him a couple of times. And then he falls to the ground. And yeah. I remember thinking, you know, zombie world, double tap. Like, yeah, you know, shoot him in the head. Yeah, you know, which she did not do. He was dead already. So in any case.
Yeah, I think I even said that too. I was like, dab him in the head.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you figure those cameras are not going to stop bullets. So,
sure, sure.
You know, at least I'd like to think so. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there was a part of me. Oh, no, go ahead.
I think two things then now we've recapped the ending. One, I don't know. Maybe it would be really difficult to put yourself in that basement and like seemingly tie yourself. Like there'd have to be another accomplice.
Sure.
Unless
his brother did it on his own.
If you've been in there the whole time, I think he would have looked a little more fucked up than he was.
He seemed kind of fucked up when they pulled him out, but
I think he'd be more fucked up.
But you know, that could all be, what's interesting to me is sort of your point.
He'd also been beaten up in the fight, in the suit. In the asylum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right. 100%.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to Evis's point and to Raina's point, I mean, I think it's a really good thing to point out that at the end, he probably is playing another manipulation game, which is like, look, I was just as victimized as you. Can't we come together and sort of like, you know, come to an understanding and, you know, regroup. And so those are some really good viewpoints, sort of like observations about the end, because I think that the movie kind of might separate certain viewers into different camps, like, which, you know, Rain is very much like sort of like, yeah, he absolutely did it. He definitely deserves it. And then I'm sure that there's another type of viewer that's like, well, maybe he didn't do it. Maybe he doesn't deserve to die. So I sort of like the ambiguity of the end. So I was just curious about what your thoughts were. So thank you for pulling those out.
I appreciated the ambiguity of whether she would keep the baby or not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, do you think there was an ambiguity about that? Why do you say that? Because I felt like she was going to keep it, but go on.
Yeah, I felt it could go either way.
Oh, okay. And because I mean, at one point they're having dinner and she says something like, if you want to be part of this baby's life. And I was like, oh, so she's decided to keep it, you know?
I thought that was just manipulation.
That's what I thought too. I thought she was just using it to get to him faster.
Sure, sure, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, 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 yeah. I really, you know, going back to sort of like the baby thing, I loved the actor who played the brother. I thought he was like appropriately sleazy and creepy, but not necessarily overdoing it. I loved the scene where he talks to Elizabeth Moss and he basically says, like, I hated my brother too. He treated me like crap too. Like that was all really nice new information to have, I think, midway through the movie. But the performance that I really thought was terrific was when she, you know, when he is giving her the deal and saying like, look, all of this can go away. You know, right now you're sort of like going to be in a mental institution, probably for the rest of your life. You're not going to get any of this money. But I thought he did a really good job in that scene where he was sort of trying to convince her to sign the paperwork. Right. Like I thought as much as I appreciated Elizabeth Moss's performance in this, I really liked his sort of, you know, because at first when you meet him in the movie, you're like, oh, this is this guy's brother and he's probably pissed off that she's getting this money. And then there's another scene where he's like, no, I hated my brother too. And then there's that scene in the mental institution where he's like, look, just give it up. And I mean, I really like the way they sort of played that character. What did you guys think of him?
Yeah, I think he did a really good job of flipping, of making it like, all right, it's serious, but like I hated him, and having, you know, I mean, he's still, I think, clearly of the douchebag variety, even though he hates his
clearly
brother.
He's a lawyer, for God's sake.
Yeah,
no.
But the flip,
no.
Yeah.
Sorry, well, I mean, lawyers.
It's clearly a family of douches.
Yeah. A confederate of douches. Yeah. A confederacy of douches.
I actually had a, like, for about, I don't know, 30 seconds, had a little bit of sympathy for him.
Yeah.
He was talking about his brother and everything. And then I was like, oh, no, he's a douchebag. He's complete douche. Full-on douche canoe.
And that's where I thought, oh, your brother's going to kill you. He's an invisible man. Ha ha, he's listening. And then that didn't happen.
That's good. That didn't happen. Well, that's good that it kind of like twisted you into another direction. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think as a whole, like, I mean, I think you guys enjoyed it a little bit more than I did. I think probably the theater atmosphere may have contributed to that, maybe. You know, being at home is definitely a different theatrical experience. I liked the last half of the movie, but I just feel like we could have gotten some more Invisible Man stuff like straight out of the gate and I would have been happy. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's unfair to compare it to something like The Hollow Man, you know, which again came out 20 years ago. Like Kevin Bacon's that old. Like, we're all that old.
You know, there's an Invisible Man that came out in 1930 something, right?
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying.
Just throwing it out there.
I'm saying that it doesn't seem like that long ago that The Hollow Man came out. Like, I'm like, holy cow. And it's so funny to me because having watched The Hollow Man, it's so 90s, it's ridiculous. Like the style of filmmaking and the style of cinematography and everything is just so like of that era, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's got a killer Jerry Goldsmith score.
It does. The score is very good. And the effects, I mean, to me, they held up. I was like, holy cow, this looks great. Like first of all, the whole concept of like disappearing slowly, I had sort of forgotten about that. And I was like, oh, that is great. And they do such a good job with it. And then the scenes where, you know, Kevin Bacon sort of has the latex sort of like mask and you can like see through him. I'm like, wow, that's probably still really hard to do today. You know what I mean? So cutting edge effects.
I mean, I love my favorite effect in that film is when the sprinklers are going off and he's walking through water.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And did any of you guys see the movie Doomsday?
No.
I mean, I don't think I've seen that. Are you talking about the actress that gets assaulted?
Okay. Yeah. So you do know what it is. Yeah. She's the lead in that film and she's fantastic.
Well, isn't she the actress that was the template for Lara Croft? In the video
I
games?
Think so. Yeah. Rona Mitra, I think her name is.
Yeah. I think she was. And didn't she actually play Lara Croft in like the third Tomb Raider movie or something?
No, I don't think she. The most recent one?
Yeah. The one.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't her.
Oh, it wasn't her? Or in one of them, a third one or one. I'd have to look that up.
There's two with Angelina Jolie. And then there's the one that came out last year, the year before.
That's the one with the woman from Ex Machina. Yeah. Okay, but in any case, I know who you're talking about. Was that movie Doomsday any good?
It's a film where the filmmaker went, you know what? I love The Road Warrior and I love Escape from New York and I'm going to smash them together.
And have a female in the lead.
Yep, and it's fantastic. I think it's really a fun movie. It's from the same guy who did Dog Soldiers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right. He did that. Yeah, Dog Soldiers, and he did a lot of Game of Thrones. And unfortunately, unfortunately, he did the last Hellboy movie.
That was a good movie.
The last Hellboy movie I actually liked. I couldn't believe it. I watched it on HBO.
Nope.
We're going to have to do a podcast on that.
Sorry?
Escape from New York?
Speaking of Escape from New York, how do you pronounce his name? Lee?
Leigh
Whannell. Leigh Whannell is in pre-production to direct Escape from New York.
Oh,
stop it.
Was.
Well, I remember. Well, you know, before it became a reality.
Before Escape from New York became a documentary.
Jesus.
Well, been going on for a while because I remember Gerard Butler was going to be Snake Plissken.
Oh, stop it. Just stop. Stop.
Well, not
stop
anymore.
It.
I think he's got no, but there was a point
where he was, Christian.
No, I mean, look, I don't want the whole world to fall apart to stop the Escape from New York remake, but Jesus Christ, just stop doing the remakes, for God's sake. I mean, I guess if that's what it takes to make Hollywood stop making these ridiculous remakes that don't need to be remade of perfect movies.
Hey, Invisible Man's a remake. What are you talking about?
Invisible Man is like a remake of a remake of a remake, but it's not a remake of that awful John Carpenter movie, Memoirs
of... Wait, I'm sorry. Wait. Did you just say that awful John Carpenter movie?
The Memoirs of an Invisible Man. I didn't let me finish.
I thought you were talking about Escape from New York. No.
Escape from New York. Okay, so wait. Let's wrap up by talking about... Because we haven't talked about the Invisible Man effects, because we've kind of been talking a little bit about the Hollow Man, how great those effects were, and I think Paul touched on it a bit, but once the Invisible Man stuff kicks in, it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like the effects of even just the kills and just like the little things, like things, you know, moving or being turned on, and then Yeah,
people being thrown around the room.
Even a certain amount of people coming.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say the fight sequences with like the hallway scene was amazing, really well done. Just a lot of the look of the. In fact, actually, I don't know. Maybe someone I saw on Twitter was talking about how look at these amazing effects. You know, they're so much better than the 1930 something movie. And I'm like, really?
Jeez, come on.
Jesus Christ. That's but ridiculous. I mean, good Lord, man. It's like, yeah, they're kind of better, I guess. But I mean, even for that time period, it was amazing what they pulled off.
Sure.
But the effects were just top notch. And I mean, just the scene where she drops the bucket of paint.
Yeah.
That was a nice, I mean, that was a jar right there.
Yeah. That scared the heck out of Amy. The sequence that I really loved, and as good as the sort of mental institution, you know, hallway Terminator 2 knockoff thing was, is the sequence in the kitchen with Elizabeth Moss, where she's just getting thrown around. And there are certain sequences, and I don't know if it's like face imaging software that they sort of put like on stunt people, like they sort of do in movies now, but it looks like Elizabeth Moss is getting thrown around. Like, it looked good. Like, you know what I mean? And there's a couple of sequences where there's one where it seemed like I think she's getting dragged by the hair. And I was just like, dude, how are they doing that? Like, do they have somebody pulling her? Like I was very much, that was, you know, it's kind of rare for a movie these days for me to go like, how are they doing that? Because it seems like we all know like, oh, green screen and CGI. But there's one sequence where she gets thrown into the living room across the table and knocked on the floor. And then, you know, Adrian grabs her by the hair and is pulling her on the floor. And I'm like, how is she getting like, because it didn't look like she was CGI at all. It looked really good.
Well, they did that tweet. I'm sorry.
Yeah. There's a great making of on YouTube.
On that?
Yeah.
Sequence?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because a couple of nights ago when they released this Watt Live, Leigh Whannell did a Twitter live with it where he would start watching it and, you know, tweet along on certain things. It was really, really informative.
I watched that too. Yeah.
It's cool. There's a lot of really good information about like sort of how they did it on there. It's just sort of not in one place like you would get on a, you know, like a DVD or Blu-ray release or something.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I'm going to have to really check that out.
And that tweet I told you about, they actually showed there's a guy in a green suit and I couldn't tell if it was Elizabeth Moss or not, but the woman, whoever it is attached to wires. So when they threw the guy in the green suit threw her and then she just flew across the room, flew across the table.
Yeah. Well, that was my assumption about that. But for me, it was like when she's grabbing her hair and she's being pulled, I was just like, what is even happening right now? Like, that's one of those sort of like rare movie effects moments where I was like, I don't know how they did that, but it looks awesome. I mean, it's terrible what's happening, but that looks amazing to me, you know? And so it's funny how we sort of, you know, consider these quote unquote like low budget movies, but they're still able to pull off some amazing, you know, sight gags or whatever you want to call them, you know?
I think this one had like a $7 million budget.
Oh, wow. That's great. I mean,
it was really low. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, by today's standards. Yeah.
I mean, it's great that there's still room for, because I know that sort of like the complaint lately has been like there's no room for like smaller budget movies, but mm-hmm. that makes me happy because like during the 80s, I mean, maybe there's not enough of them or as many of them, but during the 80s, there were a lot of movies that, you know, like The Last Starfighter or, you uh-huh. know, stuff like that, that were sort of like mid Conan the Barbarian, mid to lower budget. And I think that maybe horror is what sort of like filling that sort of middle to low budget. I mean, $7 million. Like, did they pay Elizabeth Moss most of that money? Like, I, you know, I mean, it still looks great. I'm not saying because it looks cheap, because it doesn't, but she's like a big star, you know? You have to pay them a lot of money. Or from what I understand about Blumhouse, they get points on the back end as correct. To make up for the, yeah, yeah. So either way, that's enough Hollywood insider talk. Yeah, I mean, I would suggest, I mean, unfortunately, you can't see it in the theater, so you can't have the Evis and Paul and Raina experience. But maybe if you have a giant TV and you turn off all the lights, maybe you'll get that.
Turn up for the sound. Sound is great in this movie.
Sound is good. Yes.
Yeah. I did sound is awesome. That.
The sound is very good. I did notice that as loud as I can turn it up with somebody sleeping upstairs, that being my daughter. You know. But yeah. I mean. If you, my thing is like, I think it's very good. I think that it's solid for me, like middle of the road entertainment. It didn't blow me away. I like the second half much more than the first half. And I feel like if you're into this sort of thing, definitely check it out. I don't know if it's worth paying $20 to see in your home, you know, but that seems to be the new model, which I mean, I'm fine with. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it'd be worth it if you had a group of people.
Oh, yeah. I almost said that too. I was like, hey, invite your friend. Never mind.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the whole reason for, I guess that's why they're sort of changing the model. I think for, I don't know, they assume that people like families, right, would be in the house trapped and then they could, but I don't know if a whole family is going to watch The Invisible Man. Like, you know what I mean? It's like invite your friends over. But the one thing that I will note when looking at these sort of like streaming, direct to streaming releases that are at least available on Amazon, most of them are Universal. It's like Emma, The Hunt, The Invisible Man, and Disney has released Onward as well. The thing that I'm going to say is that Disney, if you go to Onward, you've bought it. So you can watch it whenever you want. You know, like you've bought it, you own it, as far as like, we can get into that conversation another time, whether you actually own what Amazon is streaming to you. But like The Invisible Man and The Hunt and Emma, you only get that for like the rental period, which I think is like, either, you know, so Disney's doing it right. I don't mean to sound like a shill, but
yeah, but it's, and Onward's going to be on Disney Plus in a few weeks, isn't it?
Maybe I don't know.
No, I thought I heard or read that Disney Plus is going to start streaming Onward on it in like maybe by the second week of April.
Yeah. Well, all I know is that as of right now, you can buy it, and it's the same amount as The Hunt or Emma or The Invisible Man, and you bought it. You can watch it however many times you want. So, you know, that's neither here nor there. And then the only thing I would also like to say is that I didn't get to make my Hollow Man. You can see Kevin Bacon's bacon in it.
I was waiting for someone to ask about Michael.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon's CGI penis.
You see his real thing, which is, I was like, whoa, I don't remember that, but you can see.
Talk about 6 degrees.
Thank you. And with that, we shall.
It's shrinkage. It's shrinkage. It's only 6 degrees. It's cold. Shut up, Evis.
Oh man, Kevin Bacon's bacon. Get it. Hello. Anyone there?
Wow.
All right. All right. With that tasteless joke.
You are a dad. That is a dad joke.
Yeah. Whenever I do that, my daughter says, "Dad, you're better than that." And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm really not better than that. In any case, this has been the part-time fanboy podcast. My bad dad joke telling name is Christian Horn. I have been on the line with Ivis Cannavale, Reina Velarde, Paul Edwards. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We will be back hopefully soon with another episode. Maybe we've got some ideas coming up. Hopefully we can get together. Well, not actually get together over the interwebs and record another episode for you good people. As always, thank you for listening, and be safe at home. Stay home.
Stay
home, okay?
Bye.
There's part-time fanboys. Listen to those.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of episodes. Plenty, plenty, plenty.
Part-time fanboy. Part time.